This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior.
Hello and welcome to Talk of Asian Marketing. It's a real pleasure to be talking to you from Hong Kong. We're just sat here in one lovely outdoor cafe. It's, as usual, James Stanworth and Clyde Warden.
Hello.
That's a very subdued Clyde, but I'm sure he's full of energy to talk to us today about some of our experiences of being right into this international city that is Hong Kong. And we're going to really spend a little time today covering that whole international flavour that is Hong Kong. And anyone who's come through the airport will see all this bustling group of people. You've got both your Chinese immigrants from the mainland, you've got, of course, the local Hong Kongers. When you're queuing up, you see this complete multicultural diversity of people coming in, and a whole lot of Thai and Filipino workers, as well as many of the sort of very familiar Western faces, the Americans and the Brits. So maybe, Clyde, you've had some experiences like that on the street today, seeing that sort of cultural diversity of people.
Well, I think out of all the things we usually talk about, Hong Kong's the exceptional place. Because out of all the markets we look at, it is a very focused market. It's a tiny place geographically. So it's very focused. It's almost like a whole country being in Taipei. And in that way, it's kind of, it has that international flavor. And I think a lot of Westerners have been to Hong Kong, and that's their taste of Asia. I think they come away with the feeling of busyness, the crowdedness, the signs, the commercial emphasis. And we talk about that a lot. But I think there's other parts to Hong Kong. So today we'll just maybe touch the surface, and then we're going to travel around, look at some retailing, look in some detail, and report back to our listeners, maybe shoot some video, and have an interesting experience in this Hong Kong market.
That's real great. And so here we just want to get a little bit of a, like you're saying, that kind of superficial feel, initial impressions before we follow up on some of those depth kind of areas. So you've touched there, I think, the international feel. For me as a Brit, when I come to Hong Kong, it's in some ways I feel that kind of feeling of home. And one of the things that drives home feeling is things like the buses. I unfortunately, just recently, they stopped having those old 1950s, 1960s buses, the Routemaster buses. They phased out despite local protests, but I think they were finally uneconomic to run. You see, of course, the road signs that are very, very prototypically British. A lot of the street furniture is very prototypically still British.
And the roundabouts.
The signage on the roundabouts. It has that strong colonial kind of feeling. And even the police officers' uniforms, although they've sort of become a little bit more mainland kind of Chinese, they still have those pips on the shoulders that we see for the UK police service. So that colonial feeling still hangs around, and you still could see quite a lot of the Brits or expats here still doing quite a lot of big jobs in the way of law, in the way of some large government jobs still. But I think their numbers, from what local people tell me, are declining now. So for me as a Brit, I start to feel that sort of sense of home, and I think the language is one thing that really drives that home for me.
Yeah, language is an interesting one, and a little bit more complex than we face in Taiwan, but then there's some similarities too. And I think the first similarity is, what's everyone's first language, and what's their second language? And I think a lot of foreigners that come to Taiwan might be a little bit surprised. If you stay in certain parts of Taipei, in certain parts of Hong Kong, I think you can get away with 100% English. But they're small parts.
Yeah.
They're small parts. And, of course, in Hong Kong, the number one language is Cantonese. Yeah. It, just like in Taiwan, the number one language is Taiwanese. Mm. And these languages are similar but quite different from Mandarin. Mm. And so you'd have a really hard time, if you spoke Mandarin, to get your point across. I try sometimes. There's just enough similarity for basic things you could get by. Of course, the writing's the same. And that is one thing Taiwan and Hong Kong have in common is the traditional Chinese characters.
Yes, the big five characters.
Not changed as in the mainland, simplified. Mm. So this is one thing that creates a kind of commonality between the two places. But I think the other commonality is the one of what is the second language, right? So in Taiwan, we can ask, what is the second language? I think it's quite clear. The second language for almost everyone in Taiwan is Mandarin Chinese. Mm. Don't you think?
Well, the second language?
Yeah. Or would you say it the other way around?
I'd say it the other way around, but maybe I think
you're politically incorrect.
I think you've got influenced by the president.
Maybe so.
I mean, that's the official language, of course. That's I'm thinking too officially here.
Well, this
that
is my point. That
formally,
if you look at the two places where the when people grow up, the language they learn in their home, Cantonese and Taiwanese, then they go to school and they begin to learn Mandarin. In Taiwan, I think that Mandarin is much more well-established, and that's because of the KMT's rule to make it an official language. Basically, their goal was to wipe out the local language. Here in Hong Kong, you never had that problem. It was never the stated intention of the UK to wipe out, of the British government to wipe out the local language.
Local lingo, right? No.
So English was officially kind of a second language. But the problem is when you come here, a lot of visitors, unless you're in those small areas, will be surprised. It's not that easy to get around with just English, actually.
No, in Hong Kong, you have those sort of surprises where you hit the point where someone looks at you blankly, even though you are speaking English. I think the majority understand some amount of English, but there's that whole section of the population that either did work for the old administration or have sent their kids, or they themselves, of course, have been into UK or had that English education, which has meant that then English is a very natural thing, plus Cantonese. My friend is a perfect example of that. Cantonese is what he uses every day for his work, but English, it probably is, English writing is better than mine now, having spent his sixth form or his latter part of his secondary education and further education in UK. The thing he doesn't speak too good is Mandarin.
Yeah, so this is the key point.
Yeah.
So what is the second language becomes the real issue. Is it going to be English or is it going to be Mandarin? So now in Taiwan, of course, for many years, in Hong Kong, we had the big emphasis on the English as a second language. Now it's Chinese as a second language, Mandarin as a second language. So this has some marketing implications, and especially now in a time of transition. It would seem natural that Hong Kong is a place to take off to China, but there are some of these problems where things don't go so smoothly. And communications is actually one of them. Not to mention, you also still have the holding back on the simplified characters. Hong Kong is not switched over. And in this way, very similar to Taiwan. I think the only two places left.
I know. As a foreigner, you often wonder the investment value, the ROI on learning the big five characters.
Well, my wife
system.
Always harasses me, you know, to stop wasting my time on the traditional characters. You know, just give it up and go with the simplified. My son's in Shanghai anyway, so, you know, what's the point? You know, just give in, you know. So, yeah, this whole thing's interesting point. So I think although Hong Kong has this reputation, and in this way it's like Singapore, I think still there's a lot of localization there we can take a look at while we're here this week. We'll be here a couple days, look around, see if we can find some of those local retailing points. So far we've been just looking around at some shopping malls, and here we see the very Western influence.
Yes, like today we've just been in around Causeway Bay and Times Square, which is one of those classic places that almost everyone heads to for the shopping, and it has that very sort of normal mall-like feel to it with a sort of slight Chinese sort of overtone, which we'll get into, talk a little bit about. But then you can also go to Nathan Road, one of those big long roads running right through the city, and that has a much more typical Chinese feel to the merchandising, to the shopping experience, the bulk of people buzzing around, lots of small shops, and we'll also go there, and I think the contrast between the two is really really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, just today we were shopping and we saw Marks and Spencer, and we'll put some pictures up on the site there. Very typical design for the British market. I think it'd be a little bit different in the Taiwan market, but we can see that here. But if we keep our eyes open, we'll also see more traditional retail formats, or what I don't like to use the word traditional, as we often say on the show. It's updated, it's modern, but they're more locally influenced. And we can see those too. And I was just walking around today, taking some photos, and there's a little details you can pay attention to that if you're just visiting, you might miss. And that includes things such as the little temples inside of stores, you know, the little tiny temples they put
exactly.
up on the wall.
Or even some of them are not up on the wall. We must we'll include a photo of one of those where you notice they're just right down by the door, just
yes.
a very small mini kind of, I guess, a mini shrine, we could
yes.
call it, really.
Yeah, or I've seen in the morning, I've seen some of the money-burning cans, yeah. containers out in front of some stores. So a lot of this religious is shared.
And it's still integrated into the way business is done.
Very integrated.
Isn't it? Very
and I
integrated.
Think even if you go to a place like where we're sitting now, a coffee shop, the owners, I bet you $1 million, are going to be following the same feng shui and the same kind of bye-bye kind of
traditions. Aren't they, and what they do.
And this high, you know, you'd think this is nothing. This is kind of like in the West, people just go off to church and then come back and do business themselves. No, because these traditions... these are really integrated into business.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing.
I mean, that's the way people do business, isn't it? It's like one part of the jigsaw in terms of the logic for where you lay out your business, you will lay out the location of your store and so on. So it's really an integral part of the way people are thinking here.
I think it's a big influence from Hong Kong on Taiwan, actually. A lot of the business influence in this idea of getting the right numbers, getting the right location, getting the right design. And this is a lot of influences come to Taiwan from Hong Kong. Not that Taiwan didn't have it to start with. It certainly had it enough to keep me confused for a long time. But yeah, this emphasis on fortune, on having the right numbers. But James, I think some of the commonalities, because you and I know a lot of people on both sides here, and things that maybe visitors don't see. The commonalities in the manager's mindset, I think something we can see between Hong Kong and Taiwan is that real strong emphasis on getting rich.
For sure. I mean, just yesterday I was lucky enough, I've got an old university friend here. We went out for a beautiful meal. And after the meal, he said, you know, let's go for a drink. So we get in his BMW convertible. And, you know, his aspiration is, you know, to have more, you know. And he's got a lovely 42nd floor apartment. It's his life is very nice, very comfortable. He makes no bones about that. But when I rib him a bit and say, you know, the bankers in London are only getting $500,000 bonus this year and they're very disappointed, you know, he says, but they have every right to be disappointed, which I think really connects up to that mentality of, you know, it's about getting more, it's about having enough, it's about... It almost sometimes can seem obscene focus on the material wealth.
Yeah, I don't know what your feeling here. Is. It actually comes out, to me, the people I know, it comes out stronger in Hong Kong than it does in Taiwan almost.
Absolutely.
And Taiwan's already pretty strong on it.
Yeah, it is. And here it's extremely, extremely focused and normal part of existence to be getting ahead. I mean, they recently bought a Mercedes for their dad and... This is just a great, they feel this is real good, and I think it reasserts the feeling that you're getting ahead and that you're doing the right things.
And I'm not sure a lot of people would see that kind of thing, because the thing about the retailing landscape is sometimes you can just see on two sides of the same street. Here's the side for locals, here's the side for Westerners. Or visitors. It doesn't have to be Westerners.
We're just seeing it just here, aren't we? We're sat in a nice coffee house, and this is kind of the halfway house. On our left, we've got the local noodle house where we've just had a real nice lunch. If we go around the corner on the right here...
We've got the pub.
We've got the place for the sandwiches and so on.
Hamburgers.
So I think those sort of different locations. That's the other thing that is interesting, I think, in the city. It's so compressed that different areas can have such different feelings and different undercurrents about what's going on. I mean, around our hotel is such a great example.
We're going to go out there and shoot some things at night and get some of the local perspective, but also some of the tourist trap perspective, and then compare, because there is a lot of that local there.
It's great. And I mean, we've walked down Nathan Street that parallels just one block up where we're staying, which is very touristy. We moved down one step, and in fact, there's the red light district, all the neon and the sauna bars. You literally come 300 meters one way, and you've got a high-end hotel. And the nature of those spaces have changed. You've got a little bit further down a fruit market, which we've got some nice video in as well. And from what I hear, that's actually a triad den. So all these are very small locations within a very dense geographical area, but each with their own flavors and each with their own type of merchandising and how should I say, the sense of being very different within such a small area is very, very exciting. It makes the place very stimulating.
Well, that's what we're going to do the next few episodes. We're going to be spending time in Hong Kong, looking at the different types of retailing formats that stand right next to each other, a little bit of Western, a little bit of a Chinese, and we'll see what we can come up with. So stay tuned.
Great. We're looking forward to sharing more with you.
This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Meow, 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 meow